You're listening to KZFR on 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. The opinions voiced on this program do not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of KZFR, staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers. Imagining Community is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Friends of the Arts, your state local partner to the California Arts Council since 2001. Friends of the Arts creates economic opportunity by producing and supporting events and by publishing a bi-monthly arts and culture newsletter. To stay in the know or have your event listed, visit friendsof.art. Also made possible by Dahlmeier Insurance Agency, an independent agent and retail broker since 1948. Dahlmeier Insurance provides a range of coverage options, from home and auto insurance to farm and ranch coverage. You can reach Dahlmeier Insurance in Chico at 342-6421 and in Oroville at 533-3424 or at chicoinsurance.com. Guillermo Mash welcoming you to Imagining Community on your people-powered radio station, KZFR 90.1 FM. Our community recently lost a beloved radio personality and former KZFR operations director in the passing of John Dubose. John and I shared a special bond that only two fellow Navy veterans possess, and he will be dearly missed and fondly remembered by all. Tune in to Two Penny Opera this Saturday the 3rd at 11:30 a.m. for a special tribute show, including a call-in number to share memories and pay respects. We open tonight's segment with a Sacramento Source to See conversation with Allie Meadows Knight, recorded at Grub CSA Farm on Monday morning, March 22nd, during the crew's layover. Sacramento Source to See is an all-woman, three-person crew that is currently on a listening tour of the Sacramento River Source all the way to the sea. The paddle crew consists of Alyssa Winkleman, Surfer Fest Queen, Ari Kossel, Chili Master, and Jamie Trapp, the filmmaker. Their interview with Machupta tribal member and traditional ecological knowledge educator Allie Meadows Knight invoked visceral emotions from everyone within earshot and represents one of my favorite interviews ever aired on this show. The conversation starts with Ari Kossel asking Allie what the most important issue is with land management and the Sacramento River here on Peepa Radio.
The most important issue you have is what do you do with the biomass and the materials as you're processing your land management? We've all gone to a piece of land and we get piles of junk, piles of sticks, piles of dirt, piles of bush, piles of this. Those are actually biomass. That biomass and that transition has to be intelligently used. We've gotten too passive and too complacent with bad behavior with nature. You know what I mean? Where we've just like, it's almost like we watch the earth get raped and tortured right in front of us, and we just very nonchalantly look away and it's normalized. And so what is important is incorporating when we do land management repairing that we're not just cutting down, throwing into piles, and just burning things away. Some burning is good because we need we need biochar, we need to have sequestering some carbon in the ground and putting that into the soil, and that's healthy. But there's also things that we can do with materials like willow and grapevine. And all of these things are those materials that we'll be extracting. And we really need to be paying attention to our riparias and expanding our woodlands, expanding. Because we have plenty of grasslands and we have plenty of certain things that we don't need. And so the change looking forward is people are wanting to have jobs that point to a climate adaptation, smart economics, and affordable living. And I think no matter what happens, we're not going to get away from that. And so we need good housing materials, we need good food around us, we need healthy soil, and we need clean water. All of those things can happen when you introduce TEK into your pattern. And that is, like, I call an acculturation. I'm not trying to assimilate people back into being natives. You know, I'm not a colonizer. I'm not here to take political power away from everybody. I am here to enhance the tribal power, which will empower everybody. And that is a whole different approach. And so that's the new thing in the future, is looking at acculturation rather than assimilation, and then looking at climate adaptation and smart, intelligent use of materials and biomass as we do land restoration.
With so many diverse stakeholders connected to this act, how do you see acculturation happening, and like what's your hope for collaboration between, for instance, like the tribal groups and like large scale farmers in the Central Valley?
Well, if farmers were farmers, that would be one thing, but farmers are kind of cloaked in the fakeness of water brokers. So if there was really good old farmers trying to have agriculture going on here, like there was maybe 50, 60 years ago, but that is a lie and a facade. Most every farmer on the Sacramento River and every stakeholder on this area is involved in water brokering. They are there to make money off of selling water, whether they're pumping it in the ground or diverting it from a reservoir or anything. We're also going to be nation building. So tribal nations are going to be able to take back their rights. And when we have a Secretary of Interior, Deb Haaland, who's looking out for the best interest and the trust relationship with the tribes, I think that the governor and all these stakeholders in the state are going to have to get used to the fact that they are not top dog when it comes to land management and when it comes to this area. These county municipals, these city municipals, these corporations, these businesses and private property owners and state agencies are all going to understand that they are under the authority of tribal nations, not over. And when that gets clear, then we can all talk business. But until we get the facts straight of who's in charge and who has rights and who has privileges and who has entitlements, that is going to have to be settled out. And this is all about mediation and getting things right. I think that the Marshall Trilogy, that is the Discovering Doctrine, that kind of based on what people think is taking, will actually be very clear that corporations, states, private property owners have no right to negotiate for tribal resources, which is water. So that's going to change. And that's not only going to help tribal communities and salmon and all of the riparian, but it should be helping all the communities who really understand that having a community like tribes really care about the environment, really care about the water, is going to be a huge change of what they've seen from the local municipals. Lately, most counties, and some of them we have some very gracious people that do fight, you know, Nestle and all these water brokers that are coming in to steal the water from California and sell it to Southern California, just sell it as it is. That has to change, and the tribes have to step up and push those tiny municipals, those little city clerks, all of those people into their proper place. They are just rooks. They're just rooks. We have more power than us tribes, and we're gonna use it, and we're gonna strive to incorporate partnerships into this, because it can't be done alone. Most of the tribal folks, even here in Chico, we don't make but less than 1% of the population. So in that case, we have to involve everybody and partner with everybody to make it a collective effort.
Does it feel like there is a lot of collaboration between the different tribes right now?
There is on different levels. So you'll see it on forestry, and it's always where the money is. So since Deb Haaland, the Secretary of Interior, BIA, all of a sudden are getting money in for climate adaptation and for land restoration and protecting the resources, everybody wants to be friends with tribes now because the money is coming in that way. So the partnerships will happen because the money is there. And unfortunately, some people have ulterior motives when they follow money. But either way, I don't care. You just gotta take what you can and build with the opportunities that you're given. And that's where I'm taking it. That bygones be bygones. We have to build partnership and look into the future. Knowing the history of this area, knowing the genocide and the just bleak, horrible racism that came through here, I know about it. I'm gonna keep it in mind. But I'm still going to work forward and build partnerships, because we have to keep our children and our next generation safer than what was left for us.
You're listening to a SacSource2C.com interview with Machupta tribal member and traditional ecological educator Allie Mentors-Knight on KZFR 90.1 FM's Imagining Community Radio program.
Do you feel like the momentum is building? Like, do you feel like you're seeing that stuff like that starting to come to fruition, those partnerships and the collaboration? Like, are you feeling it?
I'm feeling it for sure. I'm feeling it more from local communities, like Fire Safe Council, like even forestry, BLM lands, Bureau of Land Management, they have been working with such tiny budgets with such big, huge projects that having someone like myself or other tribes come in and bring workforce development, bring in money, bring in people, bring in all this attention to these issues have been so helpful for them to move forward, even with their EIR process, their environmental reviews, it's just consultation with tribes. We're not just going to them and saying, oh, those are where these bones are, and archaeological information. We're actually going in there and telling them about ecological information. That's a game changer. And that seems to be where the partnerships are building on, is that ecological knowledge.
Nice. What is the Machuta relationship to salmon on the Sac?
You know, it's a sad thing to tell you that we only have about one or two creeks that left in our area, in our territory, with salmon. Before white contact, every creek, everyone was full of salmon, and we had different techniques of fishing based on this. And from what, you know, the stories are, you could go with a pitchfork. People were going in with shovels and pitchforks into the creeks, just removing the fish. They were able to just pick them up and take them out. And throughout the development and through all the, and you're looking like some really strong 60s, 70s, and 80s development with a very sinister anti-environmental, you know, tone. And even when they were going to be conservative and, you know, save something, they were basically developers and white Anglo-Saxon Protestant males were able to do development, but tribes couldn't do development, and anybody of color wasn't allowed to have access because it was only, development was only for the white privilege. Mm-hmm. And so that happened in Chico so much that they've shut down and killed all the salmon population and all the creeks. And people really don't have any sense of watershed in Chico, even though it is a watershed town. It is named Machupta for a reason. And they still will throw, you know, they have cows and creeks out here. Mm-hmm. They definitely, the redneck kind of, you know, get her done, holler at me, boy. I'm a stud and I've been living on here. My family's been on here for three generations. That guy, he's been out there really not really caring about the watershed and the salmon and all that population, but he'll go buy a boat and get on Sacramento River and go fishing all day for bass. So we have to get people like that either out of power, out of property ownership, or into the rooms of partnership and get them educated on how to do this correctly.
Mm-hmm. What sort of things would you like to see to try and bring back the salmon on the Sac?
So what my plan is to be able to get into as many green and federal land, public land spaces for restoration as possible, retain a workforce, get long-term 20-year stewardship contracts. After 20 years of stewarding any kind of land, you have rights to it. You have rights not only to the land, but the waters and the minerals. So if we can do 20 years of managing any of the waterways throughout here, we'll have rights to all of them. And I think that's the best way to go, because If Ammon Buddy Bundy could do it, I can do it. And I won't get killed at the end.
Hell yeah.
I like it.
How can our project best support you and what you'd like to see happen?
I definitely have a passion for building riparia. And I think that these cultural resources in our territory for riparia, at some point we're gonna have to document and get it really defined so that when we actually work for restoration, we can show and define and prove our outcomes. And we can't only prove those outcomes by just going out there every day. We have to have people that study the river, that love the river, that see the river from a whole different perspective, that can share the work and the progress that we've been making. There's certain areas right even down the river here where we have black oak woodlands right up in the riparia, and they haven't been managed, and it looks like a spooky forest because it hasn't had fire or any management. And so those are the kind of areas that I'd like to get into with the state officials and the county officials, and then invite partners to come in and whatever capacity, even if it's to come and take pictures and review and say, this was this year, and then this is this year, and then this is this year, just so that we can mark the differences, because there's beavers down there, and we want to, you know, if I had a dream, I would be, you know, getting Butte County all beavered up, you know, Leave It to Beaver and call the program Leave It to Beaver and be able to put them back into our watersheds and sink some water and get them to, you know, have that life out here. And unfortunately, they've been, you know, mass murdered by the agricultural industry out here. And so I think that the agriculture industry needs to fess up to the fact that they're not really agriculture anymore. They're water brokers. That's why they pick products like almonds and rice, because you're selling the water. You're not making food. You're liars. And you really are going to be exposed for the water brokers you are, and you're not real farmers.
If you could describe the SAC to you and like the watershed in this area in three words.
The Sacramento River is the lifeway to our future. It paints, it's our Milky Way to the galaxy, to the stars.
Nice, I like it.
Love it.
That's the river, go with the flow.
You're listening to a SACSourceToSee.com interview with Machupta tribal member and traditional ecological educator Allie Menners-Knight on KZFR 90.1 FM's Imagining Community Radio program.
Yeah, that's kind of like this whole project. We're just like, you know, trying to collect stories from like all the different stakeholders along the river and just like share their perspective. And we're really just like going with the flow. Like someone's like, oh, you should talk to this person. Oh, you should talk to this person. We're like, okay, all right. You should go here. Okay. You know, just like letting it all kind of unfold.
But there's so much power in that, you know, of just like the spontaneous connections that can happen when you're not like pushing it. You're just going with it and seeing where that flow takes you. Like, we wouldn't be here right now without that. And this is obviously so special to be here. So yeah, the power of the flow.
yeah, and just a way of like brings people up on this area, because there is a story in the Machupta people here, and there's a lot of, you know, programs. Like they had Sacramento River Partners, you know, came out and they planted a bunch of trees, but they didn't invite the Machupta tribe.
Yeah,
you know, this is still their territory that we get to be invited to their events. And mm-hmm. So that has to be changed too, because mm-hmm. the story that we have here needs to be that we're partners with people. How can you call yourself a river partnership and didn't partner with the tribe? Yeah. That doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So those things have to, and those are great people.
Yeah.
And they're wonderful people. So, you know, that happens with good people. So I used to look at, you know, things like that and go, you know, kind of, no, that's not good. But tell that I know people by heart and love them and see them around, I'm all, oh, it's just a mistake. It's fine. You know, we'll fix it, you know, and it's fine. We'll move along. Let's be graceful. And, you know, those incidents are certain things that you have to call people out and say, this is what happened. You called yourself a partnership, but you've got a tribal partner.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, at the tribal office.
You're like, hey.
Yeah. We got a list.
Do you feel like there's more of that happening, of more of that true partnership of bringing the tribe into these decision-making and then action-oriented events? Or
it does help that there's tribes that are real powerful, like the Karuk, the Yurok, Hoopa have done an amazing job of demonstrating their territory with their local activists and their local community, that people always are like, oh, we have to invite the Karuk, or we have to invite the, you know, this is their river, this is their southern. But we have really had a hard time in Butte County in this area. You'll find people that are just like, I grew up here and I never even knew about Machupta. Or I didn't even know there was Indians here. And, you know, and they're activists. They're like wearing the badge of being, you know, woke. But this is the sundown town. You know, we have, Chico is a sundown town. This is the racist as you get. Mm-hmm. Chico is proud of how restrictive it is of letting people of color live here. Mm-hmm. And they are doing a more of an important job of gentrifying. Most all homes in Chico, California are close to $500,000. Mm-hmm. And you have to have immaculate credit to get in. And that leaves out a lot of us natives from having home ownership here. And that's not fair. But that is the extending circumstances of this county and this area that I'm against. But like I said, it's either fight or flight.
Yeah.
And so I'm fighting, but I'm fighting a good fight, not the hard fight. Yeah.
If you could just like a brief message to the general public of like, what would you want them to know about the Sacramento River and your hope for its future, what would it be?
My message about the Sacramento River is that she is a beautiful woman. She's a beautiful being. She's a beautiful spirit. And she has riparia along her sides. Those are her protection. Those are the areas that she grooms and provides for all of the creatures. When we invade those spaces, when we take away from the riparia, we don't only take away from them, but we take away from ourselves and we take away from the river. And so it is imperative that we have a knowledge of our watershed and we get back to understanding where we are on this planet and our role for being a good steward.
So I'm here with the Sacramento Source to Sea crew, and they just got done listening to Allie Metter's Night. Just beautiful storytelling, Allie, you know, personalizing it, humanizing it, and connecting it with the land and the mother of the river. But what's the takeaways from the Sacramento Source for the crew here? I'll start with you, Alyssa, from what you heard.
I just feel like really inspired and empowered by what Allie's saying. Mm. Like, I don't know, you just have a really amazing way of talking about the landscape and the changes that need to happen in order for us to just really survive and like move forward. And I'm just like super inspired by you.
Yeah, similarly, I just feel in awe of the power you hold and the vision you hold. And I feel a lot of hope too when it comes to that, the future vision becoming reality and the traditional ecological knowledge being what we return to and honor when it comes to managing the sacred watershed. So thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, I think likewise, like I almost feel speechless and just very just stoked. I wish there could have been like, I mean, of course it's COVID, but I wish there could have been like 500 people just here listening to you say all that, because I just feel so like fired up and was almost tearing up, and I just really want that vision to be able to come true, and I hope that like more people can hear this message and become a part of the vision that you guys are trying to hold and like work towards, because it's beautiful. Yeah.
What gifts have you taken on from being in this space with these three wonderful women here, Allie, for the last 45 minutes or so?
I feel like I've gotten into their minds and I get to see underneath the river and all of what they've been seeing traveling down. And I feel like they're spirits that the salmon sisters that come down the river and visit our villages. And so I feel like these are our salmon sisters today, and I'm really honored to meet with them. Thank you.
The salmon sisters.
Oh, like the best. Yeah. You could have ever called.
The salmon sisters.
We are honored.
Imagining Community just published a podcast with the Sacramento Source to See experience at Grub CSA Farm that can be found on your favorite podcasting/streaming service or by visiting our homepage at anchor.fm/imagining-community. Coming up right now is an Imagining Community visit on Saturday, March 27th with the Sacramento Source to See crew at Tisconia Park, at the confluence of the Sacramento and American Rivers in, fittingly enough, Sacramento, California. Joining Guillermo Mash was Jim Ferris, board member of Save Auburn Ravine Salmon and Steelhead, and Joe Looney, a permaculturist and my host during my stay in the endurance capital of the world, Auburn, California.
You know, the Sacramento River, the further south you float on it, the more it's been engineered and impacted by humans. And I think what's given me hope is that no matter how much influence there's been, we still see wildlife, we still see the environment, there's still remnants of what the river used to be, and I feel like if we kind of just let it go, it would come back. Mm-hmm. It might take a while, but it would, you know, nature trumps all, so.
It does. What about you, Alyssa?
Oh man, I definitely reiterate and like agree with Ari's sentiments. I would say down through the Central Valley, it doesn't feel like a very natural environment. Like Ari said, it's super engineered. So it's hard not to feel a little bit hopeless going through that zone. But, you know, even just getting back down here and there's like a bit more of a riparian zone and it just feels a little more like a river, you know, it feels like that brings back the hope and the thought that the environment can recover. And as long as humans can be on board with helping it thrive, I think we can make it happen.
What about you, Jamie? Environment.
Yeah. Well, I think just like it's been interesting noticing the changes as we've gone downriver and just looking at the differences of the water color and clarity and the sounds we hear and the smells, what's in the water, you know, like at we've been seeing like a lot of trash and everything on the beaches and in the water recently, but I'm still like to try and find the beauty in a lot of places. Like even when we're going through the like where it's all the big ag land and there's all the levees, it's still really nice at night to hear like all the different sounds of like owls and birds and beavers slapping their tails and just like there's still so much vibrant life. And just like watching the sunset in those areas was really beautiful. And so even though sometimes it's hard to see like that how much humans have changed these places and that it is really suffering, I think there is still a lot of beauty in it, and I hope that like we can preserve it or just like get people to appreciate any kind of the beauty of the environment to be motivated to protect it.
You're almost the perfect segue for our listeners. Got the Rancho Llano Seco hat on. That looked absolutely beautiful. I wanted to get some comments on what you thought of Rancho Llano Seco.
It was incredible. It was in the top three of my favorite things we've seen so far. Uh-huh. It's just, you know, it's 18,000 acres and there's wetlands, there's lakes, there's native oak groves. And then they work with Ducks Unlimited to create like safe bird uh-huh. passage and habitat. So they're doing a lot of really great work there. And, you know, they only farm 5,000 to 6,000 acres of their land. So they're really trying to keep it as native as possible and natural as possible and return it to its natural state. And the folks there are incredible. It was an awesome experience.
Anything to add to that, Ari?
Oh gosh, I think it really did feel like you were stepping back in time uh-huh. when we were touring around the ranch, and that's special, you know, to be able to see like 300-year-old oaks in California and right. the Central Valley is really unique, and even just like the family aspect of it being passed down generation to generation. There's so much history there, and it's poignant.
Gorgeous. Yeah, it was poignant. What's your question, Jim?
In terms of fauna, what did you see particularly that impressed you? Somebody mentioned beaver, and what did you see, actually? You said you heard the slapping of beaver.
Yeah, we saw some beaver. Today we saw a seal, which I've never seen one in freshwater, so that was kind of interesting. Lots of bird life. When we were on Llano Seco, we saw some pheasants, which I guess are like pretty rare, and deer. What else? Lots of river otters, turtles. Yeah.
One thing I really liked about our journey is the change in the flora as we've gone. I mean, we started in snow, but we were in like an evergreen forest environment, alpine environment, and now being, you know, down in the valley with all the oaks and cypress and sycamore, it's like very, very cool.
A lot of elderberry.
Yeah. And the redbud was starting to come out in some areas, which was really cool. It feels like spring now, which is so yeah. crazy, because when we started 2 weeks ago, it was totally winter.
So very wintry. Yeah.
When a storm won it, that's a matter of fact.
Yeah.
Did you have a question, Joe, before I have a beer? Can I have a beer?
Oh, yeah. Totally. I was going to say, you guys want a beer? Oh, yeah.
Other than where's the beer, my question would be, since you're a little over your halfway point,
up
to this point, what would you say would be the strongest emotion that you have felt?
I think for me, the strongest emotion has been gratitude. You know, there's just been so much support and so many people who have gone out of their way to connect with us and to just be like genuinely kind. And even to be on this trip right now after everything that's happened this last year, it feels incredible. And yeah, I'm just like really grateful.
I would say gratitude for sure and awe, just at the community and the network that we've built through this whole process and all the people that continue to reach out and want to be involved and support us. And like, I was just looking at our Instagram and somebody had commented that they saw us from the shore, and hey, we were the guys like you saw on the shore. And I was like, which shore? We've seen lots of guys. Yeah. But I think just like awe at like how many people are so stoked for this. And like, I definitely don't think we set out to have any, it be anything like this. I think it just really, like, the early stages really just felt like, let's go on a fun adventure down the Sac. And now it's grown into its whole other life of its own, and it's really amazing.
Yes. How about you, Jamie?
I would say empowered, and kind of like reiterating what the other two girls said as well. Like, I think like there's been several times where someone that we've interviewed has just like poured out all of their life's work and knowledge to us, and entrusted us with all of this information and met with us and put it in our hands because they thought or they saw something in us that was like powerful, that is entrusting us to like go and maybe make a change or lift up their voices. And I think that's like really exciting that people feel that way, and that they're like, oh, this is an opportunity for me to like share everything that I've worked towards, and like I'll pass it on to these girls and maybe they can like make something more of it, or like let it live on. And yeah, and I'm just like very grateful that so many people have been so kind to us and like and saw that in us. Yeah,
Rivers for Change referred to what you're doing as stewards.
Yeah.
That's a great word.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great word. Maybe you guys can all high five one another and then we'll have some sort of like fun, wait. Like that.
Wait, did you want it to be at the same time?
Boom, I like that.
We conclude our Sacramento Source to Sea segment with a snippet of a feature we are working on spotlighting Save Auburn Ravine Salmon and Steelhead with the exciting news of what Robert Hain, owner of the 16-acre Pine Valley Ranch, plans to do with his ranch and the stunning natural fish and beaver habitat restoration areas on the property. Spoiler alert, I immediately thought of Allie Matters Night and Indigenous people everywhere.
One thing we didn't mention that's a sad story for many is that the land we're standing used to be indigenous people living here. And, you know, they're gone too. I mean, how much work does Sarsis do with the local tribe here as far as protecting the salmon?
You know, that is a wonderful question, because my wife and I, we have 5 children, and right now, they're all professionals and make large amounts of money, and we asked them if they wanted to run this 16-acre little ranch. And they all said the same thing to us, that, Dad, we appreciate the offer, but we wouldn't be able to take good care of this as you are. So we're not interested. So it just so happens, my wife and I got in touch with a gentleman, Mr. Encinas, and he's the spokesperson for the United Auburn Indian Community at the Rancheria. And we are discussing plans right now, giving this property back to the Native tribe.
When you mentioned that, I did have a quick follow-up question. I mean, you used the word gift to the local Rancheria. I mean, are you looking at just gifting property, a portion, all of your property, or?
That's affirmative, all of it.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, and so all we're asking is to live on it until we need help, and then we'll either go to a convalescent home or we'll have somebody come in. But that's what we're working on right now. It's the final paperwork. Yeah.
Wow, Bob.
Yeah.
Blessings to you.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Imagining Community is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by ChicoCallCenter.com, employing locally since 1999. Chico Call Center is rapidly expanding and is now hiring new employees for their Nord Avenue location. Chico Call Center works with over 200 newspapers nationwide, renewing customer subscriptions. Compensation packages include hourly, commission, and nightly cash payouts. More information by visiting ChicoCallCenter.com. Also made possible by Drunken Dumpling in Chico. First created as a food cart, Drunken Dumpling is now a dine-in restaurant serving locally sourced, fresh, handmade Asian fusion comfort food at 1414 Park Avenue, Suite 120, just behind Nobby's. Open 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. Details on Facebook, Instagram, and at DrunkenDumplingChico.com, where we love food, flavor, and our community. Next up on Imagining Community is the premiere of the North State Water Report with Jim Brobeck and Ron Topi. Jim is a watershed policy analyst with AquaAlliance.net, and Ron is a board member at runforsalmon.org. The topic this month is Sites Reservoir, a proposed $5.2 billion off-stream reservoir project west of Colusa in the Sacramento Valley of Northern California. The project would pump 470,000 to 640,000 acre-feet per year of the winter flood flow from the Sacramento River upstream of the Sacramento-San Joaquin River Delta through existing canals to an artificial lake 14 miles away.
I have with me Jim Brobeck, who is a water policy analyst with the Aqua Alliance. We're going to discuss, you know, just what's going on with Sites Reservoir, and Jim told me that there's some big news happening right now too with that. So what's the scoop, Jim?
The proponents of Sites Reservoir are composing another draft environmental impact report. The previous one they did in 2017 has been abandoned, so all the work that people put in making comments on the previous draft environmental impact report have been thrown in the trash can. They never did respond to it. They decided to downsize the project, but the main parameters of the project remain and the problems associated with it remain. So it's undergoing a process right now, and they're trying to hold some so-called small group meetings with people who have commented in the past. So sometime early next month, I will be part of a small group looking at water quality issues and Sites Reservoir.
What are they actually trying to do with Sites? Where is it, and what's the end goal? Like, what are they looking to do?
Sites Reservoir would be located just to the west of Maxwell, California. The Coast Range over there has a series of ridges before it climbs into the mountains in the Mendocino Forest. And these ridges run parallel to the Coast Range. And they plan to install several dams over there where a couple of the creeks that flow out of the Coast Range come out. And then pump water out of the Sacramento River during high flow events into Sites Reservoir, and then to be able to use that water later. That's an off-stream reservoir, so that ameliorates some of the concerns of river and fish advocates that don't want to see any more dams right on the main stem of any of these main rivers. So they would be taking water off of the river and putting it into what they call an off-stream storage facility. Of course, they've been looking at this project for about 50 years now. It's never penciled out. It's not economically or environmentally feasible. So I have concerns that millions of dollars of taxpayer money continues to flow into the planning, into the consultants that are looking at it, and into the management committee that runs the thing. But nonetheless, it remains a threat to the hydrology of Northern California. So Aqua Alliance and other groups are looking closely at it and watching as it unfolds. My primary concerns has to do with water quality.
So you said they want to install more dams on some of the smaller creeks and send that water to a storage facility. So that storage facility would just essentially be in a big open reservoir?
It would be an open reservoir. And one of the main problems with these big infrastructure projects is it increases expectations from people that live in the drier parts of the state for a reliable water source. If they're going to put the money in, they're going to demand that they get the water out. And we see that happening every year in California with the overallocation of the contracts of junior water rights holders that are on either the State Water Project, which comes out of the Oroville Reservoir primarily, or the Federal Water Project that comes out of Shasta Reservoir. And these expectations of water deliveries allow them to push in the media a story that their water allocations are not being fulfilled and that environmentalists and Congress that are under the thumb of environmentalists are preventing them from getting their rightful water deliveries. Of course, all these junior water rights holders know that their water deliveries are based on surplus water availability. And there never is the amount of surplus water availability that they expect that are in the contract. So every year they can claim they're not getting their due share. And on a year like this, this 2020-21 water year, this has been an extraordinarily dry year in both parts of the state. So the northern part of the Central Valley and the southern part of the Central Valley have had much less water than what is considered to be normal.
Describe who would be considered a major water allocation as opposed to a minor.
Well, the United States Bureau of Reclamation has recently released the numbers. They said that the junior water rights holders on their arm of the water delivery system in California are only scheduled to receive 5% of their total allocation. So it's a matter of percentages of millions of acre feet of water, an acre foot of water being the amount of water it would take to flood a space approximately the size of a football field with a foot of water. And we're talking about millions of acre feet of water that the water purveyors expect to be delivered mostly through the Delta and into canals that go into the southern part of the San Joaquin Valley. And so this year, with only 5% allocation, and on top of that, just yesterday, the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation explained that they don't even think they're going to be able to deliver this 5%, that the water shortage is so extreme this year that they think the 5%, there's not water there to even deliver that modest amount of water. So the big agriculture interests in the San Joaquin Valley are really stressed out right now because they think they're not going to be getting their surface water allocation.
So a junior water rights user would be your farmers, or?
Most of them are farmers. Some municipalities are junior water rights holders. The senior water rights holders are people who developed taking water out of the river systems prior to the building of the big dams. So these are called settlement contractors. And they are allowed to take a certain amount of water off of the river every year as part of the settlement. And they're the senior water rights holders. They're the ones that hold rights to the most amount of water, and they're first in line to get the water. They're also the people that are in a position to sell their surface water allocation. And they don't ever sell their surface water rights. They hold on to that like a pot of gold. But they will occasionally sell that year's allocation and either fallow land, take it out of production that year, or pump groundwater in what's called groundwater substitution to continue growing the crop while they sell their surface water allocation.
You're listening to the North State Water Report with Ron Topi and Jim Brobeck here on KZFR 90.1 FM.
And that is one of the biggest threats to the hydrologic balance of the northern Sacramento Valley is these groundwater substitution water transfers.
So are some of these senior water rights holders, are they big water districts or are they mostly big agricultural companies?
They're organized around the big water districts. And they can be individual farmers that are part of the district that can sell their water allocation and either fallow or pump groundwater. Or the district as a whole can do it.
Let's back up a little bit, and you were saying how they want to dam some of the smaller creeks and send this water into Sites Reservoir for storage. Do these creeks run into the Sacramento River?
They do, and what's really important to recognize is the coast range, both in northern and southern Central Valley, is heavily laden with minerals that are soluble, so that when you get precipitation on these coastal range, on the eastern slope of the coast range, it leaches these heavy minerals and heavy metals and salts into the creeks. Now, there's not a whole lot of water that comes out of the east side of the Coast Range. So that water tends to be diluted by the enormous flows that are coming out of the Sierra and the Cascade. But when there are flood events, what happens in the northern Sacramento Valley is they hold the water back of Shasta Reservoir and back of Shasta Dam. And so the water that's flowing down the Sacramento during those periods, a lot of it, especially north of Red Bluff, is coming out of the Cottonwood Creek drainage, which is a Coast Range water drainage. Most of the water would probably be coming out of the Cottonwood Creek drainage. And the Cottonwood Creek drainage, as well as the small streams that flow into the proposed footprint of Sites Reservoir, all have highly elevated levels of heavy metals and salts during these precipitation events. So according to Jerry Bowles, who is a retired director of environmental health and in the Northern District of DWR, he retired maybe 10 years ago. According to him, the source water for Sites Reservoir, which would be coming out of the Cottonwood Creek drainage, would have excessive levels of these heavy metals in it. So the water right from the beginning that would be pumped into the Sites Reservoir would have levels of these heavy metals that are out of compliance with state water regulations, water that would usually be diluted by the other flows coming out of Shasta. And then once it's put into the Sites Reservoir footprint, a footprint that contains salt mines, it contains a salt lake, it contains these deposits in it, it would exacerbate the amount of heavy metals that are in the source waters because it would be leaching it out of the footprint of Sites Reservoir. And if you've ever seen the edges of Shasta Reservoir and Oroville Reservoir when the water's low, you'll see the entire perimeter of these reservoirs that have highly fluctuating levels is a dead zone, is a sacrifice zone that has no vegetation left, no roots left to control the erosion. So once you drain these reservoirs down, as they would be draining Sites Reservoir, you'd have this naked dirt that when the rain did come back, it would be eroding gullies at a much higher level than it currently is. Because right now there are blue oaks over there and there's grasslands and other native plants that hold the soil in place. And so the amount of heavy metals that would be leaching into the reservoir from the runoff along the naked edges would further increase the heavy metal load in Sites Reservoir. And on top of that, since it would be a shallow reservoir located over on the east side of the Sacramento Valley, where there is often strong northeast winds that are highly evaporating winds, you would have what's called evaporative enrichment of these toxic materials that are melted into the water that would be stored in Sites Reservoir. So what you would end up with is water that would be literally illegal to put back into the Sacramento River to support fisheries, according to the State of California anti-degradation policy that disallows putting water into the river that would degrade the water quality in the river for beneficial uses.
And is that how they would deliver the water to water users, is by pumping it back into the Sacramento River?
That's what they claim they would be doing. But it appears to me that Northern California would be stuck with this heavy metal-laden, salty water that up here we would have to use it for some purpose, leaving other water in the river to be shipped south or to flush through the delta. So my concern is one of the toxic materials is arsenic. Arsenic is a material that rice takes up into the plant. And if they use this water to irrigate rice fields in the northern Sacramento Valley, it would obviously decrease the value of that rice for human consumption, if not make it unhealthy to eat. So my concern is that it would just degrade the water quality, degrade the soils, and lead to a degradation of the soils on the west side of the Sacramento River, much like we're seeing on the west side of the San Joaquin Valley, where the ground is becoming salty and laden with toxic materials like selenium, because the land down there never should have been irrigated in the first place because of the existence of these naturally occurring minerals.
So is any of this a result of the gold mining days?
That's not the issue that I'm focused on. I'm focused on, and others like Mr. Bowles, the retired DWR specialist, is focused on the naturally occurring minerals. And there are other sources of toxic materials that come into the river. But even without those, the naturally occurring minerals pose a hazard if it's managed in this way.
You're listening to the North State Water Report with Ron Topi and Jim Brobeck here on KZFR 90.1 FM.
So essentially what would happen is these water-soluble minerals would leach into the soil and wouldn't stay suspended in the water. And then when you add more water, it would concentrate all of those minerals?
Well, it naturally exists in the soil profile itself. And as water flows through it and over it, amounts of it do end up in the water that flows out through the streams on the other side. But if you denude the land, it will only increase the amount of erosion and the amount of these minerals that would end up in the water. And it would be particularly high levels in the site's reservoir if they do denude the hillsides over there in the same way that they've denuded the hillsides surrounding the Feather River in the footprint of the Oroville Reservoir, or the Pitt River, the McLeod River, and the Sacramento River up in the Shasta Reservoir. This is one of the reasons why I'm so strongly opposed to the raising of Shasta Dam. Every time you raise the level of the water a foot, it, around the entire perimeter of the reservoir, it kills the edges that are flooded. And if they want to raise it 12 feet, you would have tens of thousands of acres that would be sacrificed, that would be have their trees taken out on what are right now beautiful riparian zones, such as what exists up there in the Winnemem Wind II sacred sites. They say, well, it's just a quarter mile of stream. Well, a quarter mile with maybe 20 feet or 50 feet of surface on each side of the stream would then turn into a wasteland, a sacrifice zone. It's unacceptable.
Yeah, being on the board of directors of the ICO, the Indian Cultural Organization, which is a nonprofit that the Winnemem Wintu have set up for their Office of Cultural Preservation, the raising of Shasta Dam will flood a couple of their remaining sacred sites along the McLeod River.
It would temporarily flood it. But then it would be the first part that got drained as well. It would be at the top of the reservoir. So it would probably be permanently dry and denuded of any vegetation.
Yeah, it would be part of that big, kind of like you described, it looks like a big toilet bowl ring around the
That's an excellent
the land
metaphor.
When it goes down.
And these zones are not toilets. These zones are sacred lands. Not toilets.
Right. So as far as Sites Reservoir goes and how people can stay informed with what's happening, are there meetings that people could listen in on or attend and actually have their public comments heard?
Eventually they will be holding public meetings once they release the draft environmental impact report. But since I participated in the past, they've invited myself and some of my colleagues to take part in these, they're calling them small group meetings. They're not being advertised as public meetings. They're going to be internet-based remote meetings. So there's one coming up in a week or so having to do with when and where they're going to take the water out of the river. And then another one later in April to talk about water quality issues. And I'm hoping that they're honest in fulfilling our expectation that we will have an honest dialogue. I'm skeptical on it. I'm skeptical that these consultants are really willing to listen to our concerns. And with that in mind, some organizations are willing to take this to court to press the issue and to make sure there's real public review of these things. It's important for me to take part in the planning process and not just sit back and wait for the lawsuit. I'm willing to flex legal efforts when it comes down to it, but I think it's important in good faith to take part in the planning processes of water policy here in California, and that's why I'm so active in the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act process in my area, as well as environmental review of some of these big projects. Ron, I see great threats and great opportunities here. The threat is that politicians on both sides of the aisle are supporting water projects that are targeting the Northern Sacramento Valley to supply water to not just the municipalities, which tend to do a pretty good job on conservation, but also to the agricultural interests south of the Delta. Keep in mind, 80% of the developed water in California goes to agriculture. Less than 20% goes to the 30 million people that rely on imported water. These are our allies, these citizens that are doing noble efforts to conserve water in the urban environment. It is the unfettered expansion of irrigated agriculture by investor-owned agriculture interests, especially in the southern part of the Central Valley, that is driving this demand for new water infrastructure. And it's both Democrat and Republican politicians that are supporting these wasteful and unrealistic and unfeasible water projects. But it is the 98% of the citizens in Northern California who are not holding senior water rights, who are in no position to profit from the water market, that should be unifying and understanding that we need to resist the dewatering of the Northern Sacramento Valley, in spite of what our elected politicians on both sides of the aisle are pushing. This is an opportunity for the vast majority of the citizens that live in Northern California to come together to defend not just the surface water, but the groundwater. The groundwater is the foundation of the hydrologic health in Northern California, of the valley. It is the buffer that helps us to endure these long periods of dry if we don't extract too much of it as a backstop to supply the demand that the rest of the state is expecting from up here. In order for the state to have a sustainable source of water, we need to preserve the hydrologic balance of the Sacramento Valley. And this will allow the people of California to have a sustainable water supply. If we decide to integrate the groundwater of the Sacramento Valley into the state water supply, this will eliminate the final buffer we have from drought and further dewater the streams, the rivers that the rest of the state relies upon to supplement their water source. So once people can rise above their political affiliations and recognize the common interest that we all have in conserving the water of the Northern Sacramento Valley, the stronger we will be and the stronger the whole state will be. So I see it as a great opportunity, and I'm reaching out to my fellow citizens of Northern California, regardless of their political affiliation, to recognize that conservation is the first step in a sensible water policy for the state of California.
Thank you so much, Jim Brobeck, with all the work that you do on Aqua Alliance and taking some time today to talk to us about Sites Reservoir and the big concerns over North State Water. As an activist and organizer with Run for Salmon, I think we also need to not just speak of the concerns of people, but of the salmon and the other creatures that depend on healthy water in the North State, and specifically restoring healthy salmon runs, as salmon are a keystone species as far as the quality of the water within the North State.
Ron, you know the metaphor canary in a coal mine?
Yes.
Well, I would like to be able to shift that to salmon in the streams.
Right.
The salmon in the streams are the indicator, in the same way that the canary in the coal mine was the indicator.
I love that, Jimmy. The salmon in the streams. There it is.
You just heard the premiere of the North State Water Report with Jim Brobeck and Ron Topi, airing first Thursdays at 6:30 p.m. on Imagining Community. Until the next time, always remember, if you have a roof, be grateful.